This is The Takeaway. I'm Tanzina Vega. Tuesday, the funerals began. Two brothers, Cecil and David Rosenthal, were among the first of the 11 victims of Saturday's mass shooting at the Tree of Life Synagogue in Pittsburgh to be buried. More than 1,000 people attended. Dr. Jerry Rabinowitz from Squirrel Hill was also buried, as lines of mourners stretched around city blocks. And then on Tuesday afternoon, President Trump arrived in Pittsburgh, accompanied by the First Lady, his daughter, and his son-in-law. But local and national leaders refused to appear with the president, and after the funeral services ended, a quiet, peaceful protest began. More than 16,000 people signed a letter to the president written by a group of Pittsburgh's Jewish leaders. Quote, President Trump, you are not welcome in Pittsburgh, the letter read. The country often looks to leadership in times of tragedy and someone who can identify with those mourning and help direct the nation towards a higher, better place, a place of healing. But President Trump appears unable or unwilling to play that role.
I think historians will be extremely critical of the way that Donald Trump reacted to this worst attack on Jewish Americans in worship in 200 years.
Michael Beschloss is a presidential historian and author most recently of Presidents of War, and he spent his career researching and writing about the roles and expectations of the presidency.
Presidents of wartime have always had to go to funerals, console, families of soldiers who have fallen on the battlefield, because of their own decisions. And that's one reason you've always wanted to have presidents with empathy. For instance, Abraham Lincoln during the Civil War was told that there had to be a national cemetery, a new one, because so many soldiers were dying. And Lincoln said, put that cemetery right near my summer home so that I can see the Union graves being dug. I want to see the results of the terrible decisions I'm making that are creating an ocean of blood. And also, I want to be able to console the widows.
And, you mentioned Abraham Lincoln. I want to move the clock forward to Ronald Reagan and how he dealt with national tragedies. I'm thinking specifically about the explosion of the Challenger space shuttle in 1986 that I remember clearly.
Ronald Reagan was almost designed for this role of a president consoling the nation after a tragedy. 1986, Americans saw with their own eyes the Challenger accident. And Ronald Reagan gave a speech late that day that was one of the best written speeches probably in the history of the presidency, talking about what America aspired to in the space program and giving some context to what had happened that morning.
And I want to say something to the school children of America who were watching the live coverage of the shuttle's takeoff. I know it's hard to understand, but sometimes painful things like this happen. It's all part of the process of exploration and discovery. It's all part of taking a chance and expanding man's horizons. The future doesn't belong to the faint-hearted. It belongs to the brave. The Challenger crew was pulling us into the future, and we'll continue to follow them.
We also are thinking about other presidents since Reagan. What comes to mind is the Oklahoma City bombing and Bill Clinton's response to that.
You have lost too much, but you have not lost everything. And you have certainly not lost America, for we will stand with you for as many tomorrows as it takes.
How would you assess that?
Well, the interesting thing, that was in the spring of 1995, and Bill Clinton at that time was a very controversial president. He had just lost both houses of Congress. So this is not someone who was considered to be a hugely popular leader. But when he gave a speech explaining what had happened in Oklahoma City and trying to tell Americans that American history shows that we get over these things, it made him more of a president.
Now, I also want to bring up George W. Bush, who had what I recall were sort of two very different experiences with really consoling the nation. One was after Katrina.
So we can stabilize the situation. Again, I want to thank you all for, and Brownie, you're doing a heck of a job. The FEMA director's working 24.
Not his finest hour.
Not his finest hour. Lots of Americans felt that he was being insensitive, right, to the plight of those who had suffered. But then there was 9/11.
I can hear you!
Two things stand out. You know, the moment that we all remember, which is that he went down to Ground Zero and spoke through a bullhorn and he said,
I can hear you, the rest of the world hears you, and the people...
And I think the more important thing, Tanzina, was that he went to a mosque.
These acts of violence against innocents violate the fundamental tenets of the Islamic faith. And it's important for my fellow Americans to understand that.
And he was very specifically trying to make the statement, although the people who perpetrated 9/11 were who they were, that should not cause Americans to act against Muslims, and Muslim Americans were a big part of the American family, shows how a president can heal and unite and inspire. Those are essential parts of what a president does.
9/11 was obviously a major flashpoint in American history, and we're still dealing with the ramifications of this almost 20 years later. And I'm wondering, how have Americans changed in their expectations of what a president should be in these moments? Or has it changed? Do we have higher expectations now after a 9/11? And I'd like to talk a little bit about President Obama here as well.
I think we do have higher expectations, and remember how President Obama reacted to the church shooting just a few years ago when he sang Amazing Grace.
Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved. A wretch like me.
That's something that everyone remembered, and a lot of people found that very healing.
I was
Presidents have to always remember that half of their job is to be a political leader who proposes policies that make a lot of people angry, but the other half of the job is to be head of state. And head of state means unifying and comforting after a moment like this.
Then President Obama also showed, was very emotional after the Sandy Hook shootings and killings, and he was criticized in some ways for that. He was also criticized for not lowering the flag after five soldiers were killed in Chattanooga, Tennessee, in a terror attack there. So how do presidents toe that line?
You're always measuring a president against perfection. And, you know, Benjamin Franklin once said, our critic is our friend. One of the ways that we have to criticize presidents is how they react to national tragedy. And yes, you're absolutely right. Barack Obama, the frustration we heard him express after all those school shootings, saying, once again, I have to come out here and talk about an event like this. I'd hope that the last one would have been the last.
As a country, we have been through this too many times. Whether it's an elementary school in Newton or a shopping mall in Oregon, or a temple in Wisconsin, or a movie theater in Aurora, or a street corner in Chicago. These neighborhoods are our neighborhoods, and these children are our children.
Now, I'm also thinking about, obviously, this segment comes on as Pittsburgh is healing. There have been lots of different reactions to the current president, President Trump, going to Pittsburgh in light of the synagogue tragedy. And how does a president make that determination? I mean, if a community is saying, or at least parts of a community are saying, don't come, does it hurt the president to go?
I think it is up to the president concerned, but if the heartfelt feeling of a community is that you're going to help us heal faster by waiting a couple of days, I think it's not a bad idea to wait a few days. And I think historians will be extremely critical of the way that Donald Trump reacted to this worst attack on Jewish Americans in worship in 200 years. He talked about Maybe they would have been protected had they been better armed. And he also went ahead with a campaign rally that evening. I can't think of any other president of our time who would have done that.
Well, and I'm also thinking back to Charlottesville and the reaction post-Charlottesville.
You had a group on one side that was bad, and you had a group on the other side that was also very violent. And nobody wants to say that, but I'll say it right now. You had a group on the other side that came charging in without a permit, and they were very, very violent.
You know, at what point does the American public just give up on expecting a president to be this sort of moral and leader and consoler in chief?
We will never give up. And we will always demand that a president do that because it's an essential part of his job. And the other thing is that at the very least, we would expect a president not to rub salt into the wounds. Another thing that Donald Trump did that day was to pronounce himself yet again a nationalist. A nationalist is an extremely loaded word. It appeared in the title of a book by George Lincoln Rockwell, the head of the American Nazi Party, which was called The Nationalist Perspective. The subtitle was White Power. So at best, he said it inadvertently. At worst, on this tragic day, he used it to send dog whistles to help himself politically. I hope it wasn't the latter.
What are the risks as a country if we don't have a president who shows, like you said, that level of empathy, who's able to connect with Americans during these tragedies?
It's a big loss to all of us because I think we have come to depend on a president framing a tragedy like this and explaining to us how we can get over it. That's something of our modern time. And I think when we don't have a president who's able to do that, and I think that is just not in Donald Trump's toolbox, then we've got a little bit of a problem.
And it would appear that Americans are still having vigils. They're still connecting. Yesterday, for example, in Pittsburgh, there was the head rabbi and also the head of the Islamic Cultural Center there were connecting. So I'm wondering if outside of having a president who's able to do this, whether or not Americans themselves can step in and fill the void.
Of course they can. And that's what the founders wanted. You know, they knew that you could elect presidents and some of them would do certain things well, and some presidents would do things extremely badly. And they always had faith in the wisdom of the American people, if there was a vacuum like that, to do it for themselves.
Michael Beschloss is a presidential historian and author most recently of Presidents of War. Michael, thank you again.
Thank you, Tanzina.